On this episode of the Talk and Talker podcast, aka head coach and Zinkin management partner Crazy Bob Cook joins the show. Topics include when to throw in the towel, when to kick ass, alley fights with Koscheck and sparring with Kane, the plane ride from hell with DC, UFC 209 weight cuts, and 10-8 rounds. DC and Nick also discuss Lonzo Ball and a sweaty, shirtless DC smothering Nick. Dennis also answers DC's questions from episode 1, now known as DC's Dilemmas.
Well, we're back. We're going to actually do this again. I know after last week, people weren't very sure, being that Nick had such a horrible week, but episode number 2 of the Talk and Talker podcast is DC, Nick Swinburne. We got my man Dennis over here. Special guest, the chef, Blurry, sitting in the back, kind of thinking of his topics for today's show. We will have Bob Cook on to discuss UFC 209. We will talk about the Ball Brothers in basketball. Maybe hit on a little bit of WWE. That is where I make my money on Nick. And also, we will go back to talking about time and space. We had a lot of questions last week that Dennis was supposed to come up with answers for. Nick, how are you doing this afternoon from the beautiful Hilton Garden Hotel in Gilroy, California?
Good. It's only it can only go uphill from here. So we're doing good. Quick update before we started. Last week, we had an issue with the keys. So DC was typing, and as his fingers hit the keyboard, he wasn't sure if that was a noise the keyboard was making or his fingers on the keyboard. So we just had something similar. We're sitting in a hotel room, and half of us have headphones on, the other half don't. And he just said, "Hey, do we need more headphones so these guys can hear what we're talking about?" So we've got to go over the basics that if you're in a room, you can hear someone with headphones. I think you thought the headphones had a mute button on them or something, but we're good. Everyone in the room can hear you when you talk.
See, that's the issue with hanging out with people that you're not sure if they're your friends or they're just trying to look for times to make fun of you. That's what Nick does.
That's a good intro for Bob.
Come on, man. So
it may be hard to hear from the green room.
When Bob walked in, we were like, okay, Bob, we're not ready for you yet. You can wait in the green room. It's the bathroom. There's a seat in there. You can sit and wait. There's some water. You just drink it out of the faucet if you get thirsty. But
and that backfired because then, you know, we got delayed for a good 45 minutes until he finally came out. But now we're all here. Dennis is on the bed under the covers.
Keep the door closed, by the way.
Keep the door closed. So, Bob, listen. First off, Bob Cook, I always tell people my coach Bob is the only trainer that's undefeated in the UFC. He didn't have many fights in the UFC, but he's undefeated. Bob, What does it mean to you to actually watch so many guys from the American Kickboxing Academy have the success that they've had, from the Josh Thompsons, John Fitch, Josh Koscheck, Cain Velasquez, myself, all the way up to the guys today?
Well, you know what the people don't see is probably for every one that makes it, there's probably 10 guys that are in there working hard that really don't get there. And that's something people don't see, you know, that there's a ton of guys working hard, and, you know, the top guys, they get there. Some of the other guys, they may work hard for a long time and just luck, whatever it is, just things don't happen.
What is the time where you as a trainer goes into a guy and say, you know what, for those guys that work out day to day and it's not working out, when do you say, you know, it might be time to start looking at something different? Or is that even a conversation you ever have with your fighters?
I usually try to do that right out of the gate. I say, do this as a hobby. You know, have fun. Try to accomplish some goals for yourself, but don't have this be your whole career option. If it turns into that, great. But this is the hobby.
You want to ask him something, Nick, or are you going to let me do the whole thing myself?
Oh, we started? No, okay. Yeah. It's funny. So I got a good story about how the first time I met Bob was, it was like 1999, and I was the chiropractor. And Dr. Vic in Los Altos, Mountain View. And he would always introduce everyone. You know, you'd go in and he'd tell you, you know, oh, I've met this, I got this person in this booth, I got this person in this booth. And he's like, "Oh, let me introduce you to someone." So he brought over Frank Shamrock, and I was just got adjusted. I'm just sitting there, and like, I don't really know anything about UFC or anything like that. So he says, "Oh, this is Frank Shamrock. He fights." It turns out his wife or girlfriend at the time was a girl I went to high school with. So I was like, "Oh, I went to high school with her." And then there's this other guy with him, right? So they're talking about how that weekend before they'd been up in Portland, I think, for some fights, and how this guy with him is like the next big thing. He's lightning fast. Like, no one can deal with his speed. He just knocks some guy out in like 10 seconds. And I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." But it's, you know, awkward conversation because you can't figure out if the chiropractor has made us all talk, or everyone's kind
of
got to go.
And Bob doesn't really have much of a personality. Yeah. He doesn't want to talk to you very
well.
Much.
All I remember was the guy was like, you know, yeah, all excited about, you know, fighting and just, but I didn't remember who he was. So it was probably, what, like 9 years, 10 years later, where I started watching, maybe six, seven, I don't even know how many years, seven, no, probably six, yeah, two, six, 7 years later, I started watching UFC. I met Bob and Dwayne, and became friends and hanging out a lot. And I was always had this story of, and I asked Frank Shamrock, I met Frank Shamrock a couple of years later, and I was like, "Who was that guy that was with you that was like going to be the next big thing and everything?" And he was like, "I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know. You know, I don't know." And so I was telling the story to Dwayne and Bob, and I don't know if it was Dwayne or Bob. One of them was like, "That was probably
Bob.
You know? I'm like, "Wait." So I go back and I'm like, "Yeah, but the guy had hair and he had a goatee." And then he pulls out this picture and he goes, "Did he look like this?" And it was Bob. So it was hilarious. We had actually met like a long time ago at the chiropractor.
That's crazy.
So what? So you
I mean, goes back, what, 17 years or 18 years?
Yeah, that's
years
way back
at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who would you just fought? What was the fight you were referencing?
Well, if I was up in Oregon, that was probably Wenatchee, Washington, or somewhere up there, I fought. I think the guy's name was Victor Estrada.
I can't believe you remember that. Well, the one thing we always say about you and cornering, and this is what Josh Koscheck sold me on before I even started fighting, he goes, "This guy has cornered 3,000 MMA fights. So if you go to the octagon, you want him with you." Do you have a number? Do you have a number of what it would be? And what's your approach to actually cornering the fight? Because obviously I've experienced it. And we've seen the highest of highs, and we've seen the lowest of lows. What's your approach to cornering, guys? And is it the same? Is it different? I mean, I've cornered with you. I've been cornered by you. But for the people that don't know, what's the approach?
You know, it's different. It depends on what my expectations are for you. You know, you can't have expectations that are unrealistic for the athlete that you're working with. And then things happen. It's just there's some things we can see that maybe the athlete doesn't see. And then at the same time, the athlete that's actually in there doing it feels things and sees things that we don't see. So my main goal is I just try to add to what they're doing, hopefully that's being successful.
So because you fought, there's times, right, when you're like, I know, or even just from all your experience, you're like, I know what you should be doing. You just have to get over this mental hurdle or something. Like, how frustrating is that? When you know, if you could jump in there and do it, you would do it. And you just can't, for some reason, get them to get over that little hurdle or not listen to you, or how's that?
If I'm going to say there's one thing that is probably frustrating, and which will bring us to the UFC last night, is when the guys have the skills and they're in shape and they don't use it and they wait and they get in the pocket and they're sitting around and they're waiting. It's like something bad's gonna happen if you just go in the pocket and you sit around and you wait. You're not gonna like the results.
When in the first fight with Rumble, I put this up on my Instagram the other day. I'm going to play the clip. I don't know if we'll be able to pick it up because I don't know if my phone's loud enough. But you can hear the corner advice between you and between Henry. I do believe that you guys did a great job, both. But I listened to you, and this is you. As I'm finishing this round on top, landing damage. Are you picking this up, Dennis? And you hear the announcer. We go to the corner. And this is the what you give me. You hear Henry. Just listen up. For a fighter, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't get much better than that. Now, are you living in that moment? Or are you like, okay, we're fighting for a belt. I know we're close. What's the thought? Because I'm sitting there and I'm tired, right? I'm tired. I know I still have a job to do. But you hear that. You have taken his best shot. Now go and kick his ass. What are you thinking in that moment?
Well, I'm not. I'm telling you what I'm thinking and what to do.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's like, but the words don't always come like that. You know, Javier, our other coach, he may be feeling the same thing, but he cannot verbalize it, right? He's so in the moment. A lot of coaches, myself included, when I corner Kane and Luke, I'm so in the moment, I can't verbalize the words so perfectly in that situation. Because for that situation, I feel, looking back, that was perfect. We had just got off a lot of damage. Anthony looked like he's ready to fold. And in that moment, that may be the thing that spurt pushes you on to accomplish the goal.
Well, in that point in time, you know, every situation is different. At that point in time, I needed you to go out there and be confident and step on the gas pedal and run him over. Mm-hmm. Because that was what needed to happen. And I wanted to make sure that you were motivated and knew, because the reality was, is that was what was true. You know, we needed, you know, he was showing signs. And if you went out there and you circled up, you might let him back in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go out there, step on the gas pedal, and get out of there.
Yeah. Well,
what about when Cost was fighting GSP? Like, what were you thinking in that fight when you're watching a guy just take so much damage?
First or second?
The second fight. We're talking about the second fight. Yeah. And both. The John Fitch fight, too, against George St. Pierre, yeah, where John was hurt a lot. And
yeah.
You didn't throw the towel in. We've seen guys throw the towel in.
And I've thrown the towel in a few times throughout the years. But there's two different topics going on there. With Koscheck, the second fight, he was so ready to fight, was in great shape.
He didn't have a chance.
Worked hard on his wrestling right out of the gate. A jab blew out his orbital and the fight was done.
He didn't get a chance. Like we all said, he did not have a chance in that fight because of the injury so early. He never got a chance to really show what he had done.
Yeah, he took him down once, right? He got taken down. He popped back up.
Yeah, the eye swole up. He couldn't see what he was doing. You know, it was bad.
So why do you keep letting him go?
You know, and this is what relates to back to the Fitch fight. I can see in the eyes when the guy still got the fight in them. When they want to go fight, I let them fight. When they come back and the fight is gone and they don't have the fight in them anymore, that's when I'm like, all right, you're out of here.
So they both still had the fight in them?
They both still had the fight in them. And John, let me tell you, it was like the towel was in my hand.
You and, thought about it.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about it big time. But, you know, every time we'd get to the stool, I could tell he really wanted to be in there and wanted, you know, he was trying his best. So I let him go.
George was just more skilled.
You know, it was George's night. George is a great athlete. You know, you can't take away the things that George has done.
If Cost didn't get his orbital broken, what do you think would have happened in that fight?
You know, you never know, but it would have been a real fight.
Yeah.
You know, he would have been in the game on that one where, you know, the reality is it was a one-sided fight because he couldn't see what he was. I mean, he was so injured, you know, he couldn't fly home for two, 3 weeks. I mean, it was a bad deal.
And that's another thing that people don't realize about not only Bob the coach, but as the friend. We left. We came back to California to train or whatever we had going. Bob and Koss drove down to Boston. Did you guys drive down to Boston?
Yeah. Dana, because, you know, he needed a real surgery. His eye had dropped back into his sinus cavity, a complete blowout of the orbital. And so he couldn't fly, couldn't do anything. So Dana called up the Boston hospital where they knew there were some great surgeons there and got us right in, got him scheduled. And, you know, they went in, did surgery. Actually, when it lifted his eye up and put a, I don't know whether they glued it or screwed it in place or whatever, they put a plate in that now holds his eye into place.
Holy cow. How's he still fighting?
Well,
it's like a couple guys Bisping with the eye. Like Bisping looks like he can barely see. How does he still get licensed?
Yeah, wonder about that.
Well, you know, I guess in terms of the function of the eye with the plate, I mean, it's kind of as good as new.
What so not only were you coach and trainer, you're a great friend, right? You took him to Boston. So I saw a video once where you guys were in Fresno, and I think you guys had bought and renovated a building together or something. And you were in an alley, right? And you guys were, I don't know what you guys were doing, but I didn't want to see this video. And this guy was clearly a little bit out of his mind, was agitated about something you two were doing, right? So in the video, you're there and you're assessing the situation. Next thing I know, you're squared up and you're like, you're ready to get in a fight with this guy, possibly risk. I mean, God knows what would have happened if blood started flying everywhere.
Really did not want to have to hit him.
I'm thinking... Who's filming this? And then you realize, wait, who's giggling while they're filming this?
It's
Koscheck. Just standing there giggling and filming Bob about to get in a fight in an alley with some crazy guy.
Well, you know, the funny part of that is Koscheck, we were cleaning up the property. We'd just thrown a bunch of trash in the dumpster. And he was actually literally in the dumpster smashing down the trash. And this guy was like sneaking up behind him. I'm like, this is not good. So I yelled at like the guy or Koss or whatever it was at the time. I don't really remember. And as soon as I did that, Koss looked at him. And then because like I yelled at the situation, he came over and started kind of the situation that you saw start to unfold. And he was completely drugged out of his mind or something. I mean, everything he was saying made no sense whatsoever. But
so speaking of it, you could have got hurt that time, but one thing people don't realize, like you get in there and spar still, right? Like you're not just like on the sideline telling people how to do this. You're in there. Like how many injuries have you gotten as a coach?
I don't remember. I'm banged
up. You've had some pretty crazy
ones. He tries to spar, he will not spar Kane. Everybody else he'll go and go with, but he won't go with Kane because Kane just runs you over. Like, it's like he cannot help it. Even when he's going light, he'll still run you over.
Well, the problem is I'm just not in shape anymore. And, you know, Kane doesn't get out of your face.
Yeah, he's there
and
the whole time.
You can't run. And so there's no possible way to rest. A lot of the other guys, I can use a little footwork or move or stall or fake or do something so I can breathe. That's not a possibility with Kane, so it's just ugly.
You said you didn't quite remember the story with Koscheck, but I know one story you do remember. And being involved as you've been, I know you've experienced a lot of things. Tell the people here the story of you and I going to Australia on 48 hours notice to go and fight Lucas Brown, who became heavyweight boxing champion in Australia. And we're in the back of the plane, Nick, and this is the most insane story. 38-hour travel, go right to the weigh-ins, but on the way there, Bob and I had an experience. I finally fall asleep, and this happens.
So we're flying, and we're flying on the big, big double-decker, I don't even know what you call them. I think they're Airbus. Where it's the full two stories the whole way of the plane. And I just remember seeing, like, when they came out with that plane, like, you know, there's, like, a dozen airports in the world that can handle it because the airport has to be a certain thickness to be able to support the plane. So we're flying. We flew from San Jose down to L.A., and then we jump on this double-decker deal, and we're flying down there. And, you know, he's sleeping. I'm watching movies and checking the flight tracker and this and that. We're like, almost there. Like, we're within, like, 45 minutes to
we're in the range. We're finally in range. And you know going to Australia is far.
We're starting to descend, you know. Okay, cool. And they come on and they say, we're diverting to Fiji. So I look on the map and I'm like, Fiji's like 2 hours the wrong direction. What in the world's going on? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure Fiji is not one of those like dozen airports that's set up for this giant plane.
Yeah.
So we're flying for a while, and then they're, you know, they come on again, and they're like, you know, don't be alarmed if you see any liquids coming off the wings. We're dumping fuel.
Jesus. At this point, he decides to wake me up. The ultimate panic guy. I'm sleeping.
Yeah, I'd love to sleep.
He wants to wake me up.
So I wake up, and I'm like, you know, this is not good. They don't give us any explanation. I said, the one thing, if something goes wrong here, I at least want my damn shoes on. So I put my shoes on.
Why? Why is he putting on his shoes? It's like, your shoes aren't going to help you in the middle of the ocean.
Might make you sink.
He puts on his shoes.
Well, I'm figuring if we're landing in some emergency or whatever, the last thing I want to be is barefoot.
Yeah. I guess he's going to run.
Yeah. So you wake DC up.
I wake DC up.
I start to panic. Like, I don't know what to fucking do. I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do here, you know? I got a new baby coming. We're going to Australia trying to make a little bit of money, and Bob's putting on his damn shoes, which is not making stuff better. It's like putting on his shoes. So,
and then what really puts DC over the edge is they had those airphones.
Who uses those? They're so damn expensive. No one uses those. You know the ones that are in the back of the seat? It's like $10 a minute. I'm like, nobody ever uses that phone, especially where I'm from, right? I have no money at the time. So I'm like, I know the last thing I would do is pick up this phone and use it. You know what Bob does? He picks up the damn phone and starts doing his last will and testament.
Did you really?
I did. I called D real quick, who didn't answer the phone because it was like in the middle of the night. I left it on his message machine real quick.
Left what, like your will and testament?
Dude, yeah. It was bad because now I'm just kind of
sitting there. And I'm like, well, okay, I got all bases covered. I got my shoes on. Will and testament's done. I'm ready for whatever.
So then what happens?
We land in Fiji. And as soon as we don't land on the runway. We land off in the field somewhere.
Well, it's on the runway, but like...
way away from the
airport.
But
they take us away from the terminals. And we're like sitting out on the end of the terminals. And they don't... they haven't told us anything other than we're going to Fiji and we're dumping fuel. We still haven't been told anything. We're waiting out, and it's just like this grass. And we sat there for like 4 hours.
But as soon as we didn't, and all of a sudden, these marshals just run onto the plane. So now they're telling us we can't use our phone. We can't do nothing. Bob starts to use his phone because he's panicking. Some lady.
I'm texting on my cell phone. And the lady next to me is like, the plane's going to blow up if you use your phone. And I'm like, shut up.
Have you ever seen Smeagol from Lord of the Rings, how he's all kind of creepy? He's like down on that ring. Bob's like that with his phone. So Bob's all, my precious, you know, holding his phone. And the lady's all, you're going to blow up the plane. And Bob doesn't even look up. He's all, shut up. Because he has to send the text because we all think we're freaking dying.
Because everybody's concerned now.
Nobody's saying nothing.
Because nobody's saying nothing, but also I left this last will and testament on the plane, and they all know we got turned around. So Dwayne and Cassandra, everybody's freaking out.
Like everybody's freaking out. Because they wake up from sleeping, and they got Bob's will on the freaking voicemail.
That's great.
So people come on the plane.
Nobody ever gets off.
Nobody gets off, really, that we know. They go upstairs, downstairs. We don't know what's going on. We never knew what's going on. They eventually fueled up the plane. We took off.
Brisbane. We went to Brisbane, where we're not supposed to be at. They drop us off there for a few hours. We get back. We leave Brisbane, go to Sydney, where we get there on Friday 12. Weigh-ins are at 4. We go and weigh in. We fight the next day. I'm sitting on the freaking bench at the arena, falling asleep in the middle of the night. Bob's like, wake your ass up. You got to fight in 30 minutes. I'm just sitting there like, I couldn't even stay awake.
I went and got him a coffee and made him drink a coffee.
Right before we stepped in the octagon.
So he wouldn't be asleep. But, I mean, we went through that experience, which we never found out what happened.
What happened to this day.
And he still had to get on a plane to go back, which would have been freaky at that point.
And we literally went from the plane airport Two weigh-ins.
Two weigh-ins.
Not to the hotel. Two weigh-ins. Back. He, you know, slept for a bit or whatever, but, you know, all your times are all screwed up.
Oh.
And then, so he's sleeping in the back, falling asleep.
It was bad.
I poured some coffee in him. I'm like,
you got to go fight, dude. Like, get up. And go fight. I'm like, Bob, I'm so tired. I'm just tired, Bob. I need rest. So we go out, and Bob's like, just go. He goes, listen. This is the advice Bob gives before the fight. He goes, Daniel. He goes, this guy's like 6'5", 285 pounds. He goes, the son of a bitch can't wrestle. Go take him down. Elbow him in his face and let's get the hell out of here and try to get home. So I went, and me and the guy, we're standing across the octagon from each other, Nick. And I mean, there's about 5 feet of space between us because he's afraid of me. I'm afraid of him. He doesn't want to get close enough for me to take him down. I don't want to get close enough for the guy to punch me. I shoot from halfway across the cage, take him down, elbowed him, cut him open. The referee stops the fight. I jump up and go, I'm an animal. Blood's like everywhere. I'm like a savage. We get on the plane. We go home. 48 hours. That was great. But I thought people should hear that story. That was one of the most crazy experiences Bob and I have had on the road. So
that's a good segue, actually.
Are to UFC know? 209, right?
No, to Dennis. Well,
oh, you know, Dennis. Let's talk about Dennis.
One of Dennis's questions that he wanted to answer you from last week is you were like, how does the plane stay in the air?
Yes.
I believe he's got the answer.
Bob, that's one thing. Yeah, we were talking about this last week. I want to know, how do planes fly?
So when a plane's flying forward, the curved part, upper part of the wing decreases the air pressure, while below the wing increases the air pressure. So at the end of the wing, when it points down, the actual pressure is what gives it lift. But you also need the speed of the plane, which for a typical airline, it's like 150 to 180 miles an hour. And like a Cessna is about 63 miles an hour. So it's just a play with the air pressure, the wing angle, and the speed.
So Dennis, here's the thing. Okay, great that you found that out for me.
I felt like a book report.
But you've got to be very careful here. Because if every week you go and find answers to these questions, and you read it as you just did, your voice is a little creepy at best. You know, hey, you know, at best, your voice is a little creepy. You could come off as a little bit of a, you know, teacher. You don't want to be the teacher or the nerd, you know. Like, you want to make sure Nick's the nerd in this equation. You don't want, you got to watch yourself, Dennis.
I'll take my spot. I'll toughen it up next time.
Can you read it again with maybe read it how you think DC wants you to read it.
Well, you know, when you watch those good TV programs and they got the narrator that always, like, the voice of God that comes in, there you go.
All right, so first Dennis takes a shot at it. Then Bob will give a summary of why a plane flies in his best voice.
Go ahead. Yep.
All right, go. Dennis first. Who's going to vote? Blurry will vote. Blurry votes.
Hey, Blurry, stand up to your mic.
Up.
He
dropped his phone.
Say hello.
He might need to give us a summary on that also.
Yep, go ahead. What's up, Blurry? Ladies and gentlemen, the chef. The chef is in the building. Did you understand what Dennis just said, chef?
A little bit.
What did he say exactly? In your own words. What did he say?
How does the plane fly?
How does the plane fly? He's rubbing his head at this point.
Repeat it?
Yeah, let's do it again.
Okay, let's try it again. So,
animated voice.
As the plane flies forward, the curved part of the plane decreases the air pressure, while the under part of the plane, or I should say wing, increases the air pressure. And the angle at the end of the wing that points down is what creates that lift. But you also need speed to get that air pressure to lift the plane.
I got to say, Dennis did that for memory because he was not looking at his notes.
He did not look at his phone again.
No.
Chef, what did he just say?
Why does the plane fly?
Come on, Chef. You got to give us something. You got to give us something. How does the plane fly? I mean, we got to have video on this.
Let's do Bob's version, then we'll go back to Blurry. Okay,
we'll come back to Blurry.
Okay, I'm going to take it in the layman's terms here.
Okay.
Okay, so we're driving down the freeway.
Uh-huh.
We're doing 65.
Yep.
Roll down the window.
Yep.
Put your hand out the window.
Yep.
Now, when the hand's level, it's flat. Now, you tilt your palm up.
Your hand starts to move.
Your hand rises. So what's going on here is the wind is pushing your palm
up.
Right up, but at the same time there's a vacuum that's created on the top of your hand. So that's why your hand is now rising, because the pressure is not equal.
So the top of your hand is sucking
your the top of your hand is being sucked up to the sky as the bottom of your hand is being pressed by the wind.
You got
which
that show?
Which is creating the lift. And of course, the faster you go, the stronger it is.
You got that, Chef?
A little bit.
Okay, so last chance, Chef. Summarize it.
So I'm trying to
the speed. You need speed, wind angle. What else?
Speed, wind angle, and the top part keeps the keeps it flying, but the bottom part, like.
Okay, so Dennis, okay. If Dennis, this was your first time teaching a lesson, the chef made you completely fail. So
I
you
failed
go,
pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, one bad, because the chef can't even tell you what happened. He heard you twice.
Yeah. All right, yeah.
All right, Chef, we'll get back to you a little bit later.
And then Bob just walked in off the street, no research, and gave a good explanation of how a plane flies.
That was actually really good.
You know yeah. why, right? Because Bob's a dork. That's what he's a dork. Like, I'm saying, this guy, the other day, I go to the gym, and this dude's sitting in his car, and like, he's got a Prius, right? And he's also convinced me to buy a Prius, which I love. And I hear the loudest music, but it's NPR. That's all he listens to. He's like, you want to go to Fresno? I'm like, yeah. He's like, we're going to ride together? I'm like, absolutely not. You're going to have a talk radio the whole time. It's all he listens to, Dennis. All right, let's talk about UFC 209. First off, okay, I think this is the most pressing question, Nick. Is Bob... What happened to Khabib?
Well, you know, I wasn't there.
But you're one of the coaches at the American Kickboxing Academy, so you're partly responsible.
Oh, now it's on me. I'm gonna open with this, including you. Over the last 20 years, the guys that I've been directly involved with, that I travel with and do the whole shebang, I've never had anybody miss weight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Khabib, he'd been coming down in weight, and you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, he's not, he shows up fight week, he's not that far off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's within striking distance. But what a lot of people don't realize, in my view, is it's not the weight that you're just cutting fight week. It's the weight that you've been cutting the last 6 weeks, 2 months leading up to that.
Yeah,
that it all adds up, and that can compound and become the real problem. You know, there's a big difference between cutting 10 pounds fight week and you've cut 20 pounds or 30 pounds the 2 months prior to that, or a guy that's just cutting 10 pounds fight week.
Yeah.
That those are two completely different equations.
So we get to the fights, and obviously Khabib Ferguson fell off last minute, which was one of the, you know, probably the most anticipated fight in a fight card.
Yeah. Quick question. So I read that Ferguson said to Khabib at the weigh-in, at the press conference, whatever they did the day before, the stare.
Yeah, press conference.
They said, enjoy that weight cut, buddy. So does he think he just looked at him and knew?
You could tell when you look in the face, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple telltale signs. One, either a guy looks big or he looks real sucked up and his eyes look sunken in and his cheeks and are sucked up, and they look like they just got out of the mortuary and they're going after the viewing, ready to go 6 feet under.
You know, Jones said that to me too at UFC 200. He goes, you look at him, he goes, his eyes are sunk in, he goes, I feel great. He goes, he's already started to cut his weight, you know, so you can tell in a guy's face. But that's one thing, especially in my shoes, is that every time I cut weight, I look like that. It doesn't change. So, you could tell.
You have many different looks. You have out of season
fat
TV just look.
Yeah, TV
nice,
look.
Nice, round and
nice
happy.
And round.
Nice and round. And
you
happy.
Have training camp
where it starts to thin down a little bit,
and then you have pre scale check
death. That's just death. But to the fights though, Alistair Overeem last night delivered a devastating knockout of Mark Hunt. Mark walked out of the octagon afterwards, seemed pretty upset. Overeem has these performances where at times he looks great, At times he doesn't. But last night it seemed like everything went according to plan.
I don't know. I think Mark was definitely in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, Overeem had, they both had some moments. You know, he obviously got him with a great knee, and I don't care who you are, you get hit with a knee like that from a powerful guy like that, it's lights out. But you know, I thought Mark there for a minute had a pretty nice flurry going where it was questionable. He might have got
into the first.
Yeah, he might have just about was there, and you know, it slipped away from him.
And the rest of the fight card, Lando Venata had a good fight against David Tamer in the co-main event.
What was our I can't remember. It's been a week. What was so, the, so who did we pick last
it
week?
Was that one was fight. It was the one fight that came down to it. And
who did I have? I can't remember.
You had David Tamer. And you actually won. So it's like I didn't want to really say it because I knew you would actually stick it to me there, but
I think we should just retire this whole contest after one event. We don't need to do it again.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There are fights next week. In the main event. We're gonna like just skip to the main event. Woodley versus Thompson. Uneventful at best, Bob, is how I would describe that fight.
Well, is that a question or a statement? Or
that's a statement by me, and you just kind of take, you go and you talk about, you tell me about the fight.
You know, in the first few rounds, maybe that was Woodley's strategy, was to just kind of let him slow down a little bit, where he, you know, where he wasn't quite as quick on his feet. I don't know. But you know, he sure got it going in the fifth.
But that's the question though. If you have that ability, why as Tyron Woodley, a guy that I root for, and when it was going, I was like, hopefully he won 1-3-5. Cause I knew 3 was his because of the takedown, 5 was his because he fought well. I was hoping one would go to him because it was so close and nothing really happened. He actually got the decision. Why not just go after the kid?
For sure, 5 was a 10-8.
No way. No, I absolutely disagree. I absolutely disagree.
How?
Because just because you get knocked down, it's not a 10-8, Bob.
You don't get much closer to a finish,
Bob,
than what that was. Mark Arthy was like, do I do
it? I get
stop
it,
it?
Bob.
Do I not?
I get it, Bob. But that was a 15-20-second flurry.
It doesn't matter when the ref is gonna stop. Oh. When the ref is like questioning whether to stop the fight or not, there's a 10-8.
Bob,
if that is not what is a 10-8,
when it is a sustained dominance by one party over the next, that is the rule, Bob. You cannot say, because unless we're scoring fights like boxing now, whereas in boxing, the moment you fall, it's 10-8.
You get clean knocked down and almost finished,
Bob,
with the referee ready to stop it. That's a 10-8.
This is the first time where I've looked in your eyes and go, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
So if the guy goes out there and dominates the whole round from from beginning to end with a jab, but the guy's in no
danger
because it's a jab.
I am talking about.
But it's a complete dominance because he lands 100 punches with a jab.
Bob,
is that a 10-8?
Bob, I am talking about sustained dominance, Bob, where one guy looks
he's got a great jab.
That is 15 seconds, 20 seconds at. It was only 20 to 30 seconds at most.
Okay,
that
we'll agree to disagree.
By the way, context, Bob has been looking at me and Dennis and giving us clear looks like, yeah, obviously I'm right. Clearly I won this
argument.
Yeah,
but that's because that is how he thinks. But Bob Bennett, the commission, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, went up and said himself, I disagree with one of my judges. They don't do that. And said that was not a 10-8 round. It can't be. But
well, maybe Bob Bennett's wrong.
Even without 10-8, even without the 10-8 round, Tyron still won the fight. But to score that 10-8 based on that explosion, I don't believe it's right, Bob. And I am the analyst. I'm the guy that works for Fox Sports. And this is my show, Nick. So we're going to go when I get the...
You can't be wrong.
So I am right. Dennis, would you care to...
Dennis just threw his mic on the ground and walked out when DC said it was his show. So we'll get him back in here. Dennis, come on. Stay.
Come on,
just
Dennis.
Stay for a little bit.
Okay, it's our show, Dennis. I'm sorry. Our show. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Who won this argument?
It's t-
tough one.
You don't know Bob from you don't know Bob.
You're making eye contact, trying to intimidate him right now.
I don't intimidate. That's one thing I don't do.
Turn around and look.
That's one thing I don't
do. DC did call you a nerd a little while ago.
I mean, that's a without watching the fight, I don't know. I just
as a fan, what do you think is a more dominant round? Like clearly outclassing him without really hurting him, or a moment where you've this close to having him done? Which one would you give more credence to? I don't even know if that's the right word, but
almost done.
Like almost
if,
done.
If the, see, if the ref's about to stop.
So, voice so, of God
say so Bob would win.
So it's like, but it's like, it's just so fast. Like, it's just, Nick, do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it's subjective too. How do you know if he's subjective. Almost finished but or
here,
not
here
almost
was the
finished?
One thing. I would agree with you if Steven was, you know, if he was kind of pretty clearly dominating the rest of the round. And
they
then,
were all super close.
But it wasn't. It was like almost neutral, and then Tyron
did that.
Almost well, finishes him.
The two most dominant rounds belong to Tyron.
Yes.
Three with the takedown and the control, and five with the knockdown.
Yes.
For sure. But
the takedown and control wasn't, you know, yes, he won that round, but it wasn't like he was killing him like he was in the fifth.
One more question before we go too far on this. The So you're watching afterwards, right? And so what I want to know, like, what is the guy thinking? Like, what is Woodley thinking afterwards? Where he's won this fight, he's defended his title, wasn't the prettiest thing in the world, but he's probably relieved, happy, and then he's booed. And every question afterwards is like, "Are you hurt? What's wrong with you? Why'd you fight that way? Like, do you not even? Are you just like, I don't even care. I got my money. I won this fight. On to the next one. Or is your ego just burning?"
Well, I mean, some of it is you just fought for 30 minutes. You're so freaking tired. You just want to go relax somewhere. But yeah, it's so easy to be a quarterback from the stands or television when you have, you know, you have no idea how hard it is to touch a guy like Stephen Thompson. It's not like he's just a willing opponent that's going to let you do what you want him to do.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is what is he? What, 58-0 or something?
Yeah, kickboxing,
something ridiculous. And he's got a style where it's like you're lucky to even touch him.
Yeah.
And he flirts that line. You know, he understands where he can engage and just staying outside of where you can.
Okay, so all right, well, UFC 29 is in the rear view mirror and we have to move forward. So Bob, we really appreciate you stopping by, giving us some time. I hope you enjoyed our studio.
Bob can stay for – I mean, Dennis has still got some more science questions. We might need Bob to explain anyway.
And we'll bring him back, but yeah. I think we have to move more into a subject.
It's basically DC's like, actually, Bob, no more talking.
That Nick actually – this is where Nick actually can –
He lost the argument. Now
where
he wants
Nick actually,
out.
Yeah, where exactly. Nick actually can
– You kicked off.
Can participate because obviously in the fight conversation, I just really just crush him. So one thing that Nick is very passionate about – is basketball. Our little Nicky baby tried out for the basketball team on a number of occasions and was...
I didn't get drafted, so I
and
just
what was,
got invited
and,
to camp.
And he was made... He went to look for the roster, and it said point guard, you know, let's just say Daniel Cormier, just for an example. Center, you know, Dennis. Forward, Blurry. And way at the bottom, it said manager. That was Nick Swinburne. So every time Nick tried to play, he was made the manager. But he loves basketball. So we talk about basketball. The Warriors, great, you know, great team. I love the Warriors, my team as they are yours. But we do have varying opinions on the Ball Brothers. They are a hot topic right now because the dad's boisterous. Loves to talk. Lonzo in college, maybe the number one draft pick. The two younger brothers, LiAngelo and LaMelo, are doing very well in high school. We start our conversation with this, Nick. Is Lonzo Ball the best player in NCAA basketball today? And does he get drafted number one in the draft in the spring?
Well, I think there's two parts to that. So is he the best player in college basketball? And then should he get drafted number one, right? Because the best player in college basketball won't always be the best pro. A week ago, I was like completely on the side of I don't get it. Like, I don't understand. Like, when I watch him, I don't see what everyone else sees. Now I see a little bit of it. I still think there's a little more hype. Like, so I don't think he's athletic enough to be as dominant in the pros as everyone seems to think he'll be. I also realize, we talked about this earlier, like, taken out of context, like, we're analyzing, like, a freshman in college, and his brothers are, what, sophomore and junior in high school.
Yeah.
And we're comparing them to pros. So it's not really fair how we're evaluating them. But just because they've kind of, their dad's thrown them out there in these comparisons, you just kind of take it for a little bit. But I don't know. I think he's got incredible passing ability. I think just when he passes, it just looks different than when everyone else passes, like the crispness of it, the smoothness of it. But I just don't think athletically at the next level it's going to translate as much. I think I have this theory, which is probably completely ridiculous, that, you know, when I was younger and I was a Warriors fan, you got who was in that meeting where you decided that Joe Smith should be the number one pick over Kevin Garnett, right? Or who went into this draft and evaluated Kobe Bryant and decided that you should take Todd Fuller? Like, that just seems crazy to me, right? So I remember we drafted Vince Carter, and we were stoked on Vince Carter, and we traded him for Anton Jameson, and you thought, okay, I'm an average fan. They're both were great on North Carolina. And I went to the open practice, and the first time I see Anton Jameson in the layup line, I'm thinking, does he have a chance? Everyone wants to know, does he have the chance to be the best guy? You know, like, you don't want, oh, he's going to be a solid rotational. You're like, no, does he have a chance to be a superstar? And you see Jameson. Jameson had a great game. He had a bunch of 50-point games, had a great career. But you see him in the layup line, and he's running, and his feet are sticking. I don't know what's called when your feet angle outwards, right? And it's just the way he walks, and he's just got a weird balance, and he's just leaning forward. And it's like, you could just tell as a normal person, huh, like, it's just not, he's not going to be the super, super, superstar, right? So I think, I remember saying when, what's the kid on the Lakers? D'Angelo Russell?
Yeah.
Right, so when you watch the games, I think, I have this theory, which is probably wrong, but you look at guys, and if you look at their calf muscles, I think a lot of times you can, how their legs are proportioned, you can see to some extent their potential. So you got a lot of guys in the league where it looks like their ankle, the width of your ankle just extends almost all the way to your knee, and you got a little calf muscle that sticks out all of a sudden. Then you got the guys whose calf muscle extends all the way down. There's no curve. There's no change from, like, your calf to your lower leg. It's just a solid, like,
fat
tree trunk, right? So those two, I think, are limited. And you got guys that just have the normal proportion. Like, if you look at Blake Griffin, you're like, holy shit, he's got, like, normal person legs. They're just huge. So when I saw D'Angelo Russell, I was like, why? I get it, but, like, look at his legs. There's no muscle. It just goes straight down. And I remember talking to Kirk Lakob, who was assistant GM of the Warriors, and I was like, is my calf theory crazy? And he's like, the problem with your calf theory is you're talking about 17, 18-year-old kids. Like, they're going to look totally different when they're 23, 24. Their muscles are going to develop, blah, blah, blah. So I've gotten off track. Lonzo Ball, he's athletic looking, right? I would say LaMelo's the one where he would fall into my calf theory. And then LiAngelo is almost like, which is DC's favorite, I think, but he's almost like, he just doesn't have the right body type, I don't think, to be a successful NBA player. So, long story short, Lonzo Ball, I think, will probably be a top pick. He'll be a good pro, but I'm not thinking, like, superstar status. Like, Steph Curry, like, the thing with you're forgetting is, like, Steph Curry, when he was hurt for that year or two, and all he was still setting records for 3 points, but he just couldn't get to the basket, and he wasn't the Steph Curry that's now. That's why it's like, has there ever been a player who improved that much as he got drafted? I think when everyone starts comparing people to Steph, and it's like they're forgetting about how athletic he is, how quick he is, how smooth he is, and all that stuff. And I don't think, like, you know, you watch LaMelo, getting off topic, but he doesn't get to the hole that easily in the games. He's not the best player on the court always. I actually thought when UCLA was playing in Arizona that a guy on Arizona, I can't remember his name, was like, to me, why isn't this guy as hyped as Lonzo?
Well,
that was a long-winded answer, which basically did not answer anything. That'll probably get edited out. So
when you think about Lonzo Ball and the draft, so you look at the top 10, 15 kids that are going to get drafted, and all of them are freshmen. They're all kids that played in high school last year. They're only in college because of at least the 1-year rule in college. You made a good point about his athleticism. It seems like he's moving in slow motion on the court, but because of all of his natural ability he has, he makes things happen. Now, I like it. Because remember, I like Tracy McGrady. It always seemed as though McGrady was moving at a little bit of a slower pace, but he was still fast.
Yeah, but he was also 6'9 and could jump out of the building.
But this guy's 6'5, 6'6, plays point guard.
Yeah.
Same, you know, he's going to be big for the position.
But I don't like if you look at how upright he stands, another one of my uneducated things, he's so upright. Like, it looks like he might have a hard time touching his toes, right? And he's a little bit pigeon-toed, and he's like, his lateral movement, if you watch him try to guard someone, he just does the quick reach. So I think that at the level he's at, he can do these bursts of athleticism, which make him make these plays. But in the NBA, against guys that are all as big, all as fast, all as skilled, he's not going to be able to make those plays.
I think people attribute a lot of his success to the type of offense that he's playing into, because UCLA's up and down. It's fast. When you're in that type of offense, you don't generally have to be able to create as much, because so many shots are created just coming up the court because everybody's sprinting. It's a sprint. That's why you look at the Rockets. I know how, like, a lot of our arguments go back to the Rockets or the Warriors, but you look at the Rockets and you look at Mike D'Antoni's system, and guys may not be as good somewhere else, but when they play for him, they're almost all-stars. I think the right system will be needed for Lonzo Ball. So when people get mad at his dad for being boisterous, going, we want to play for the Lakers, we don't really want, because they know it's that type of wide open system that will allow him to be successful. Luke Walton and Steve Kerr, that system the Warriors plays allows for a lot of quick offense, a lot of shots from behind the 3-point line, a lot of openness, whereas he won't be confined to a more traditional, slower half court type of system that some teams play in the NBA.
Do you think? I mean, I don't see him being better than Jordan Clarkson or D'Angelo Russell. So I'd be like, the Lakers draft him because of the pressure to draft him in LA, and he's kind of the same thing. It's like not a huge upgrade. I don't blame his dad. I think his dad's increased their marketability. He's going to get way more endorsements than they would have without him. You know, they compare him to Jason Kidd. So Jason Kidd, you probably romanticize the stuff from when you were younger, right? But I just remember Jason Kidd and being like, dude, everyone can be sprinting and he's going 1,000 miles. He's like a cartoon, like kicking up dirt, where he's just moving 1,000 miles an hour faster. He's doing everything faster. So I see the Lonzo Ball comparisons, and a lot of it's just they look similar, right? So he's going to get compared to Jason Kidd. But he's not doing that. I mean, I did last night when he was playing Washington State. I was like, okay, maybe he is taking it easy, because when he really puts the gas on the pedal, whatever the hell to say. I guess then he hauls ass, and he was that. But I think, and his passes are great, but like James Harden. So you compare him to James Harden, moves slowly and kind of like is very, there's flows and just kind of takes what they give him. But as a finisher, I would think James Harden's got a million shots in his arsenal. Lonzo Ball appears to be able to always make the pass. A lot of the passes are the same, but I don't see him being able to do all these crazy finishes, get, you know, shoot from anywhere. They've got those weird jumpers, which may or may not be, probably will be tougher in the pros. So I don't want to hit on, you know.
I like the guy that makes the pass first, especially at point guard. Yeah. You know, what, like you said, if you're going to compare him to Jason Kidd, as good as Jason Kidd was at also scoring, he always was a guy that looked to make the pass before. Jason Kidd had a success because he made everybody around him better. Yeah. Jason Kidd wasn't a guy. Jason Kidd wasn't a Derrick Rose type of point guard. He wasn't a D'Angelo Russell type of point guard. He wasn't even, and I don't want to really, like, I don't really want to upset you here, but a Steph Curry type of point guard. Steph isn't a guy that's 12, 11, 10 assists per game. You know, he'll get you 28 points. But he's going to score for you, but the team has to get themselves involved more than he does from a passing standpoint. Now, he'll give you the flashy, beautiful pass where you go, wow. But again, that's just one assist. Yeah. It's not 10-11. It's not Rajon Rondo at his best when he was given 12, 13 a game. It's not those types of point guards. I believe that Lonzo Ball has that ability when he goes to the NBA to actually involve all of his guys and be a guy that gets you 10, 11 assists a game.
Yeah, it's possible in the NBA that the game opens up, it's more one-on-one, and all of a sudden his athleticism looks different. But, like, if you're not going to be the guy that, I don't know, I think Jason Kidd, like, even just look at him, and again, it's this, but, like, low center of gravity, super fast lateral movement, great defense. Rajon Rondo is going to lock you down, plus get all the assists. I just think, I don't, for me, I mean, it's why maybe stay in college a little longer, but I don't see
those guys don't.
I don't see Lonzo Ball.
Nobody does. He's one and done. Most of these kids are one and done.
But that's, you know, will he continue to develop? Like, I thought D'Angelo Russell was going to be, he's good. I mean, you're comparing, like, you know, really good and good, but, like, he's good, but he's not, I don't know if he, you know, he probably would, in the, back in the day, he would have been better if he just had those. Now, it's not, I think they should go to the pro. I think they should take the money. I think they should have the option. They shouldn't have to stay in school. But as far as their development, sometimes it's not better.
So this is my thing when I think about kids like this, and I think about the kid from Washington. I think he's from Washington, who people believe is going to actually go above Lonzo Ball. What's his name? Let me see here. Markel Fultz.
Yeah, he's, okay? he's a little smoother.
He's smoother. But he can't. I don't think he shoots as well as Lonzo Ball. Now, when you look at these guys, I watched these guys in college. These guys are scoring, you know, 20 points a game. And I think back to Kyrie Irving at Duke. Kyrie was getting 14 points a game. Blurry just went to the bathroom. Yeah,
we don't have all of a sudden we got to flush
so
it.
You're
going to
pick that up. Yeah. Blurry doesn't take into effect that we're actually live here.
Kyrie.
When Kyrie Irving got drafted, I didn't get it. I was like, what? I was like, why?
He was hurt at Duke, and he was...
Yeah, I was like, this dude's hurt. Yeah, he'll get you 14. I go, 14 in college? That's nothing. But then I think to myself, and I look back, and I go, for a lot of these kids that are playing college basketball, this is it. This is the highest level that they will go to, Dennis. So they play defense from start to finish, where in the NBA, people talk about, well, the space is... There's more space on the floor. I believe it's because guys don't play defense at the very beginning. They start to play when the game starts to matter, third quarter, fourth quarter. Whereas in college, if Lonzo Ball is getting 19 points a game, those kids are trying as best as they can to stop him from the very first tip-off. So when he gets to the pros and that space opens up because guys aren't trying as hard, Nick, I believe then that 19-18 goes to 24, 25. I mean, hell, no. Kyrie went from 14 points a game to 24, 25 a game.
I think there's just there's a smoothness and like a create. I don't know. Kyrie's just, you know,
he's amazing.
Unique. So there are certain players that come along, they come out of a system, they go to the pros with all the freedom. And that's what I think Ball's dad said is going to happen to him. Be better. But it's also, you said these kids are guarding him all the time. I mean, you got Steve Alford's son who is like going to break some all-time like 3-point record last night, and he looks like a 35-year-old you know, guy playing college basketball. I just think getting your shot off in the pros is going to be so much harder. And like, if you watch Curry, like, now that they know just to get up on him, he has to do so many quick little things, and he gets his shot off lightning fast. I just think that everyone's like seeing that and thinking it's easier than it is, and that more guys, oh, this guy, you know, in high school without anyone in his face, or in college with a 6-foot guy barely in his face, like, he can get a shot off so quick, is completely different than like the speed and the height and like all the stuff that goes on the NBA. So he should have the ability to be a really good pro. I just think it's like, I don't even know actually what I'm arguing about. I think it's partially just the expectations, and his dad comparing him to Steph Curry and stuff is crazy.
So is dad's comparisons and saying stuff like Lakers need to draft my son, does that help his kid? Or do you believe that he's putting unneeded pressure on his kid's back? A kid that, in my opinion, has handled everything this year like a true professional.
Yeah, his temper on the court seems professional. Like, he's not like showboating.
Could you imagine what this kid is going through on a day-to-day basis?
I think he's increased his marketing opportunities, and I think he definitely hasn't hurt his position in the draft. And anything will help him. Probably didn't actually change it, right? They're probably going to draft him if they're going to draft him. I think he's got a great chance. I just think some of the expectations are different, and I have my leg theory and like how upright guys are and their lateral movement and stuff. I think I just see it as like there's a, and it could be that I just haven't watched enough, but I think there's that part of getting by a guy. Whenever he gets by a guy, he just seems to then whip a pass back out. And there's that being able to finish in the middle of the lane, being able to take it all the way against. And if you don't have that, and they know, and maybe he does have that, but I just think he's going to have a hard time getting that shot off. And not a hard time. He's still going to do better than a lot of guys, but compared to they're the ones that threw out the comparisons to the Steph Currys and the Kyries and the John Walls. I think it was it John Wall or Kyle Lowry that said, like, man, that poor kid, like, when he comes in the league, like, Steph's going to torch him. All of us are going to go after him.
Well, that's the thing, though. Like, but that's the pressure that dad is putting on him right now. Not only him, but all of them, because he's talking about how great his boys are, which is what a dad does. I mean, I talk about my son, knowing that my son can't hardly wrestle, but I talk as if he's a state champion.
Yeah,
because that's what you do for your boys.
But the boys' credit, they all seem likable. They all seem like they're, you know, working hard, playing within the system.
The little one for me is the one.
Yeah,
I don't like the half court shots pointing to the floor before he shoots.
Well, there's going to be
92 points in one game, and literally probably didn't pass the ball at all.
Yeah, there's going to be entitlement with a lot of them. The expectations, the entitlement, and then I think the other one is going to have a hard time, right? So he's almost like the Khloe Kardashian, right? He's going to be the one that's just like, you know, you're going to have Lonzo that's going to be probably Kim Kardashian. He's going to be the star in it. You're going to have the younger brother that's going to be the young one with all the potential and flashy.
What's her name?
Who?
The Kardashian in that situation.
Courtney.
No, that's like the oldest one.
Oh, there's more than three. I forget about the other two.
The fact that you actually know all the Kardashians.
Wait, Courtney's but she's the smaller one.
She's the little older one. Yeah.
Oh, I thought I just was going by.
Status.
I was going by like size instead of
leg
age.
Size.
Yeah.
And then it was ankle one. Size and calf size.
No, but I think I haven't seen any videos where. But then again, the guy's a freshman or sophomore in high school, right? So if you watch the game where he scored, even when he's got all those points, his teammate, what's his name? His teammate seemed like a better player on the court.
The big one, the big center. The center seems like the best player on the court.
The player on the other side, on the other team, the point guard seemed like a better player, a little left-handed guy. When you watched him against Matter Day, we were watching that earlier.
Yeah.
And that little, you were calling him John Stockton. That guy looked like a better player.
I love that kid.
So I think hopefully, you know, the first one had to kind of go without the hype, right? I'm assuming he got a lot of hype near the end, so he had to work hard, probably no sense of entitlement. It's going to be harder for the younger guys when their brother's top pick, making millions of dollars, especially if he's playing in L.A. in their hometown, the talk of the town. It's a lot for a kid of 16, how old are they? 15, 16, 17-year-old kid to take all that in stride while you're playing to 10,000-seat crowds and you're just trying to be as flashy as possible.
So, again, you know, we talk about these deals, and it feels as though I am the one that is siding with Lonzo Ball, saying that I believe he will be a high-level pro. I think your issue with him comes when they compare him to Steph. Because for you Golden State Warrior fans, Steph's untouchable, right? You don't say, well, my guy's better than Steph Curry. I believe James Harden is better than Steph Curry, but I could never win that argument with you.
Yeah, I think Lonzo Ball could be like John Wall, which is great. But it's
what's wrong with that?
Well, because there's number one picks that are like transcendent number one picks, which is what everyone every year tries to be. And then there's number one picks who are just the, you know, really, really good, consistent all-stars that probably missing one part of their game that put them to the top. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's great for him. It's just the questions are like, is he the next? They're comparing him to guys who haven't come along in 10 years, or is he a once in a decade talent and all that? So I don't see that.
For the record, before we move on, LeBron James, greatest player of all time. Agree or no?
No.
Come on.
No.
Is it because they beat the Warriors, or is it because you're one of those guys that feels that nobody will ever be better than Michael Jordan?
I think nobody better than Michael Jordan. And I think, I mean, Magic is just as good as LeBron during his day. Yeah. I don't see it. Yeah.
Let's put this one in the pocket for next week, because the LeBron James argument needs to be, I mean, we have to discuss this because I do believe he's the best player of all time, hands down, better than Jordan, better than Magic, and better than anybody else that's ever done it. So we will speak about LeBron James next week, but we must move forward. Dennis,
More science, right?
It's your time, buddy.
So we got two more.
Let's talk about a few more of these things that you have went back to figure out.
I'll make it as complicated.
What should we call this? We should call these something. These are things that DC wonders about.
There's a lot of shit, you know. So like sometimes my mind gets the best of me, and I got a couple more for Dennis to go next week.
Bob, you better get ready for it because you might have to pipe in here if Dennis can't explain it properly.
Okay, I'll start paying attention.
Bob just tunes out the whole basketball conversation. He hates it. You hate it, Bob?
I mean, it's all Greek to me. I don't really follow it, so.
Bob thinks he still thinks he got ambushed on the 10-8 round thing.
He's pissed. Yeah. Go ahead, Dennis.
All right, so we got two, either space or stomach growling.
Oh, let's go stomach rumbling.
Let's go stomach rumblings first.
So to set the record, DC last time said he was talking about being in the dental chair, and the person working on him, her stomach kept growling. And he's like, what? Why does that even happen? Why does your stomach make noise like that?
Or this, why does L... My friend, my business partner.
He's asleep.
Why does he? How's he do that, Dennis? That's for next week. How does a guy fall asleep so fast?
Yeah, we got one more person here. We hadn't introduced yet. L is fast asleep on the chair. We're in a small hotel room. maybe DC was right. Maybe if you don't have headphones on, you can't hear people talking.
I mean, how?
Because he's the only one without headphones on.
That's pretty wild.
He's out cold.
Go ahead, Dennis.
So the stomach growling, it is related to the movement of food and air through the intestines. So what it is, it's just the muscles like squeezing and pushing the food out. And the noises is when air gets trapped and it gets squeezed around. And that pretty much is what stomach growls.
But why does it happen when you're hungry? Because there's no food or anything to squeeze.
Well, it's just...
Yeah, and I did say that. I said, why isn't there a muscle?
You did say that. Why isn't there a muscle that helps you to control
it? So there's no muscle that you can actually activate on command, right?
No, apparently. Well, they say that when the food goes down into the stomach, the stomach wall, I guess, there's a lot of muscle in it, and it actually squeezes and mixing the food, and then the intestines are actually pushing that food down once it passes through the stomach. So that's...
Bob, you got anything to add?
That means you need to shit.
Yeah, that...
In layman's terms, it means you have to go to the bathroom,
yeah,
right?
And how can it be the same noise if you've either got too much food in you where you need to take a shit, or you don't have enough where you're hungry? That makes no sense.
Well, I think there's two scenarios here. One, you're hungry. Two, you ate something that doesn't agree with you, and you're gassy, burpy, and other bad things.
Yeah. Have you ever had a guy in a fight who was like couldn't concentrate because he had to go to the bathroom? Or right before the fight, it's like, I gotta take a shit, and I just, you know, you didn't nervous any of that?
Of course.
Who was it? Please, say a name. Who stomach failed him?
Anyone that's mentioned it like during between rounds, like I gotta take a shit.
No, I've never had the actual when the fight's going, but pre-fight, that's very common. You either you got to take 10 trips to piss or 10 trips to shit.
I would never make it to the tunnel. Like, even when I was playing if I'm playing AYSO as a kid, I'm like, Mom, I got to go to the bathroom. I got to go to the bathroom. You get that nervous feeling. I would never make it out of the stall.
You'd never get – you don't think you'd ever make it to the fight? You'd be like, I there's no way. I'm too nervous. I'm just like, holy shit.
We talked about this once. Someone was saying, could you – and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, maybe if I had trained to fight or I looked across and thought, oh, I got some clear advantage, or I fucking hate this guy or something. Most likely, cage door closes and I'm fucking over the top.
Hightailing.
Yeah.
First, Nick has to get past the pummeling.
Yeah.
I've got a story on the pummeling.
Well, yeah. And before that, Bob told me. Once, I was talking to Bob once and he was like.
He's in shape now. He does the bike all the time.
I know.
We were talking about something. We're talking about fighting or something. And we were asking Bob just basic stuff like, hey, if someone, you know, get a fight, what should you do? And he's like, oh, you could hit him here, you could hit him here, and you just got to get the hell out of there. And then he's like, but let's preface this by, you shouldn't get a fight. By the time you've thought about, oh, this guy's about to hit me, what should I do? That guy's already hit you, and you're fucking done. He goes, you don't have the fight in you.
I got a question for you. So when you used to come and do the bike at AKA, all right, so a little bit of a backstory here. AKA, we try to keep the gym clean. But it's a training fight gym. There are rooms that are specifically for the fighters. Fighters in general don't keep things as tidy as they should. Bags stink, gloves stink. Our friend Nick here, bit of a germaphobe. So he doesn't like things that are nasty. My question is, what did you feel when you were in the gym and you're having the pummel, we're sweating all over you, it stinks horribly. What does a germaphobe feel in those circumstances?
I'll do the germaphobe thing. I'll let Bob tell the pummeling story. But the germaphobe, so I went down and these guys were like, you know, I said for whatever reason I could come do the bike class, and they're like, whatever. So I go do the bike class, and it's about 45 minutes when it moved. It got a little farther, 45 minutes from my house, so it's a long drive. And I'm like, fuck, you know, I'm going to get fucking staff and all that shit. I'm gonna be covered in, like, oh, this guy's, what are we doing, you know? And so I get down there, and then I'm like, well, I should bring, like, stuff to shower. And I'm like, wait, all I've heard is horror stories about DC just dominates the locker room and the showers. And I think I remember Kane or Luke or someone telling me about, dude, you don't want to be in the shower. Like, when DC comes in the shower,
don't,
it's just.
Wash, hey, your face. I walk in the moment. The, shower.
The moment I go, bounce, wow. Like, as soon as I walk into the shower, everybody's like, oh, clear out.
So I'm like, there's no way I'm showering. I'm not taking the chance of being like, ah, Nick's in the shower. Let's get it. So I'm not showering. So then I'm like, these mats, I mean, I know they clean them all the time, but it's going to be, you know, so it's I went and got defense soap, and then but I didn't want to shower at the gym. So I basically sat there afterwards talking, and it was like I was just burning, and I'm like, I just got to get home. I got to get in the car. I got to get home. I think I put a towel on my seat all the way home, straight in the shower, defense soap. I was good.
Wait, so you're just feeling like you're on fire the whole time, but we're all still talking.
Yeah. And I want to sit around and talk, but I'm like, fuck. Is it like, what's the incubation period? Like, is it 30 minutes? Like, how soon do I have to use this soap to eliminate any of this? All right, miserable. Bob. So let's hear the pummeling story, because it was pretty funny. So let me preface this. So I go into this workout knowing that it's, you're on the bike and then you're doing something, but I don't really know what something is. And I told Bob, like, I don't want to fight. I don't want to wrestle or anything.
You went with me.
Yeah, yeah, it was horrible.
So one of the drills, you know, is, you know, wrestling pummel. It's like, Nick's like, well, what's that? And it's like, well, you know, one arm goes up, one goes under, or whatever. And he's like, well, it tickles.
Yeah. So I can't do it without. Like,
I'm trying to pummel with him, and he's giggling and laughing.
Yeah. So we do that. I was, yeah, I couldn't, literally could not, I'm just not used to being touched like that. I'm like, I can't do this. So then we do the bike workout. I'm like, Bob, what am I doing on the bike? And he's told me to practice. I actually got a bike. He's like, you got to keep these RPMs on the bike. Come down and try class. I'm like, all right, fine. So I'm doing pretty good. Like, I've basically got the mileage on the bike. But I'm thinking that, because when I was practicing, I was just doing a minute on the bike and doing nothing, and then waiting a minute and then doing it again. So I go, what are we going to do? He's like, just relax. Just get on the bike. So the first round, I think we just did sit-ups. And I was like, all right, I'll do sit-ups against and sit-ups and punch this bag at the top or something. Next round, I'm like, what are we doing? Now, I didn't like the pummeling, right? So he's like, takedowns. And I'm like, what? So he's like, just let me take it. Just, and he just takes me down, and then he laughs at me. So then the next round, I get back on the bike, get off. And DC is like sitting there, and he's like, I'll go with him this time. So I'm like, what? So I get off the bike. DC takes me down, lies on top of me, sweating everything. And he's like, come on, get up. And I'm slowly getting up. I'm like, fuck. So I get off the bike. I can't remember what happens next time. Someone else does it. Then Koscheck wasn't even doing the workout. Koscheck walks into the room, and he's like,
I want some.
I get off the bike, and I remember he's like, takedown, but he got me in like a standing guillotine, whatever. And I'm like, I was freaking out. I was like, there was so much pressure on the back of my neck that I thought he might. I mean, literally, I thought I'm gonna be the guy that just, they're fucking around, they break his neck. So I'm like, stop. So I get out of the crowd. He's laughing. So then I got Kane, and then it got to the point where I'm on the bike.
Kane too. Yeah. Everybody just wanted a piece of Nick.
Yeah. And then Kane, I remember, because he was like trying to take me down. I just grabbed the back. I grabbed his leg, and I'm kind of like, fuck, is this a better position, or am I just gonna be in a pile driver? It's like. So then he's back.
I'm so tired. Yeah. Nick was all, I'm so tired.
I get on the bike. I get on the bike again, and then I'm going. And then Witsy was there. Witsy, and he's like, you know, he's like, oh, he'll hold mitts, you know, just, I'm like, Bob, seriously, can I fucking do something else? So he's like, just hit mitts. So I go over there. He's holding, I'm hitting mitts. And then about 30 seconds later, he just fucks around and pretends to go for a takedown. And everyone's like, even he went for a takedown.
Nick's like the easiest person to take down in history. So Wheatsy was trying to take him down.
So I got a call later from Bobby Razik was there. He was filming something. And he called me later. He's like, hey, you all right? I'm like, well, yeah, why? He's like, I just checking on you, dude. Like, your head was purple. Like, I was really worried about you. I'm like, what the hell?
These guys, like, so our bike workout is like, it's like legendary. People love it. Like, people love it, you know? So sometimes people want to come in and try it. So last year, before the fight in July, this guy I started talking to a while back, I'm a huge Survivor fan, the show Survivor. And this guy, his name is Coach. His name is Wade. He was one of the biggest villains in Survivor history. We start talking on email about being a noble warrior and all this stuff because the guy's like really into like meditating and everything. So he goes, I want to come up and train you guys. So I get all the guys to let Coach run us through this little warm-up where we're like stretching, and Bob goes, that's fucking ridiculous. I'm not doing this shit. He thought it was just absolutely ridiculous, you know, because the guy, Coach has like a ponytail, and he's like one of those guys, you know. Dude started doing the bike. He was dying. Bob's all, what's up with your boy? All he's doing is walking around, rolling his damn wrist. Because he was just like literally walking around, rolling his wrist. And dude, people think they want to do the bike until it's time to do the bike. Right, Bob?
Yeah. That looks a lot easier than it is.
Bob goes, he's walking around, rolling his damn neck. What was the one that really drove you crazy?
I don't remember now. I just remember laughing.
He was exhausted because, I mean, it gets to 90 degrees in that room in the summer. It gets hot. And you're red. And, yeah, these guys think they want to do it, but they don't want to. So I remember when they told me Nick was coming, and I'm like, this guy doesn't like germs. How is he going to do the bike with us? Yeah. But, I mean, it's not like he's going to go with me and it's going to be like a couple drips of sweat on my arm. I mean, this is like buckets of water just falling off.
This is you getting a takedown sitting on top.
And I want to take my, and because it's
and
him,
and all I want to do is catch my breath, and I can't.
He cannot breathe because the water is going to go into his mouth. So because I know it's him, I take my shirt off too. So it's like, I'm not only doing it to him because I'm full of sweat, I take my shirt off. So now all the sweat is just on the side of his face. I'm like, this dude has to be miserable right now.
You're just making sure you rub your belly up.
Oh,
over
it's
his
so
face.
Bad. Like, and we just all just constantly did drills with Nick because we're like, he was saying this was going to be the basis for workouts at his base camp gyms. You know, he wanted to incorporate the bike into his classes, so he needed to experience them first. So he came and did the bike, and I bet you have some horror stories, like nightmares about that.
Yeah, and it was validation that I was like, there's more people like me who are not going to want this exchange of sweat. But I did. I mean, I had never wrestled or done anything like that. And I was like, on the bike, you're tired. And the faster you go, the harder it gets. But at least, like, it's consistent and you're doing the same thing and going forward. Combining that with being out of breath and then getting thrown on the ground and someone lying on top of you going, get up, and barely letting you up. And you're holding your breath. You're straining ways you didn't know you could strain. It was like, it was horrible, but it was fun, sort of.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing about it, you know, trying to break up boredom.
Yeah.
And we believe that in terms of simulating a fight, that's about as close to it as you can get, you know? So that's why those guys actually came up with the bike workout, because a fight's not a constant 25 minutes. It's kind of spurts. You know, there are times where you do rest a little bit, you know. So Bob and them, I don't know who created that bike workout.
Well, you know, the originally what had happened was,
go ahead, Bob. Yeah, you're talking. I'm talking.
I mean, you guys, hey, are
so if we're having a side, hey, okay, so Bob's pulling back the curtain here. So we're having a side conversation that has nothing to do with you. So when you're answering a question, Bob, you continue to answer and pretend that we're just trying to figure out what we're doing next, Bob. But now you let everybody know what's happening. So it's like you don't do interviews.
Whatever. Okay. Anyway, I'll tell the story. You guys do whatever the hell you're
okay,
doing.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, back in the day, The Airdyne, my first experience with the Airdyne was I went out to the Olympic Training Center, and it was Van Arsdale was getting ready to fight in the what was it, WSF, or I'm not exactly sure what it was called back then, but it was one of the shows was trying to make a run, and he got on the Airdyne. We were at the Olympic Training Center, and he rode it for about 15 or 20 minutes, and he said, I need a trash can, and he started puking while he was riding the bike. And I was like, oh, there's something to this Airdyne here. It's pretty interesting. And then, you know, in the process of that, I rode the R9 and I was like, oh, this is just miserable. This is horrible. But I was like, if you don't ride it the whole time, it might be usable.
Worth
like,
it, yeah.
Like if you're going to just try to ride 20, 30 minutes at a pretty high pace,
can't do it.
You're just going to die. Your legs, whatever. So, and that was because Van Arsdale had, he had some knee issues, so he couldn't run. So, you know, most of the time back then, everybody, you know, run for cardio. So that was, it started with him with transitioning, and this is a long, long time ago. I mean, over 15 years ago. It started with him with going back and forth between doing drills and going to the Airdyne, and it evolved since then. But that was really the start of it, was Van Arsdale was riding the bike at the Olympic Training Center with his head in a trash can puking while he was riding the bike. And I was thinking, I need to investigate this.
It works every single part of your body. So before we go, the last topic we had last week in terms of DC's
dilemmas. DC's dilemma. That's pretty good.
Was space.
Yeah, he wanted
why is it called space, Dennis? Like, right?
Yep, that was it.
Why is it called space?
He also wanted to know why is the floor not called desk, but we'll limit it.
No. What's wrong with that?
Space.
What's wrong with that? Why is it called space?
So the word space is from the Latin word spatium, and I guess for much of its history, the word was a noun in reference to both time and area. And it was the first time space was used for outer space was actually in a book in Milton's Paradise Lost, written in 1667.
Wow.
So that's why it was called outer space. It was first time it was actually referred to that.
It's crazy that a word has history. You said much. In much
like it was used as a
for
noun.
Much of the word's history.
Much of the word's history was a noun, apparently.
So my thing is this, though. It's just like what I don't understand is why is the word the word? That's it. I just don't know why the word is called the word. That's it. That's my question. Now, obviously we can't answer it.
Well, Dennis might be able to. Give him a few days. He's got it.
Give me a few days.
But I just don't understand why the word is the word. And who made it? Who made it that word?
I mean, I have no clue.
So you have to look up how did words originate.
I'll just take a stab at it.
At what?
Give
space?
Me a shot. Yeah.
All right. So you didn't like Dennis's explanation.
I don't know.
Dennis was saying like, hey, this wasn't an opinion.
There's history there, but you know, as a layman, what does that mean? It means nothing to
right.
us. You know, I don't know, and I haven't Googled this. So, I mean, space, right? We're talking about outer space, generally.
Outer space,
right?
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Well, there's no matter there, right?
I have no idea. That's the thing. We don't know.
It's in a vacuum. There's nothing there.
There was a vacuum in his airplane story, and there's a vacuum here. I'm starting to. We got to fact check this. He might just be throwing out words.
He might just be throwing out words
understand.
That we don't understand.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
Hoover.
Yeah. He's all, these guys don't know what a vacuum
he's like,
is.
Hey, Bob's working for like the Hoover vacuum company. He's all like dropping like hints at it.
Subliminal radio ads.
You know, there's a vacuum, like a Hoover vacuum.
All right, so we got matter in a vacuum.
So there's nothing there. There's no gravity. There's nothing to. So space. I mean, I don't know.
But why can't that be, Bob? Why can't that be called cup? Outer cup. Seriously, it could be right. Like I mean, why?
But I mean,
why does the word space refer to space?
I think that word has been around a lot longer. There's a space between you and I.
Oh, but why is there space between us? Why is there not microphone between us?
Well, there is.
More space, you know what I'm saying?
So more specifically, if you're saying it's outer space because there's nothing there, right? And there's inner space, but we're full of stuff, so it can't be.
I don't know. Who knows?
Exactly.
That was a stab at it. And Dennis is sitting here going,
something.
I already fucking told you guys exactly why
just,
this
I
is.
I just said that.
It wasn't an opinion.
That's right. A fact.
Let's get Blurry back one
blurry,
quick time. Blurry.
One
blurry.
Last time right. before we go anything.
Why
is
it called?
Anything you'd like to add?
Why is it called space? You got to get closer to the microphone.
You got to be closer because last week you came in very faint. Why is it called space? Try to get close to the mic so there's not too much space.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't get to look it up.
You going to look it up?
Yeah, I'll look it up later.
Well, perfect. That pretty much ends it. You know, Blurry, we'll look it up later.
We got a topic for next week. Dennis and I were talking about this. I was reading, which just seems so ridiculous, that there's an article about how they want Mars to be more inhabitable. So just no big deal. They're just going to put a magnetic layer around Mars to stop solar winds from hitting it. I was like, imagine waking up and being like, you know what we should do? We should put a magnetic layer around Mars.
Who does that?
What the? We did. Yeah.
There are some smart people in this world.
It's crazy.
Like, yeah, but they got too much time on their hands.
Yeah.
What else could they be doing with that time?
Something productive.
Bob, would you live on Mars if there was a protective layer?
No.
Why?
I'm good here.
Why would you not? But why would you want to live on Mars?
I'll go there after you do.
I also read that the title was Amazon starting delivery service to the moon. It's like, it never said like, yeah, we're going to have these space shuttles so people order stuff. It's like, we'll send it to and from the moon. We need, DC didn't have too many dilemmas this week. So Bob, can you give us two or three topics, science or just crazy related, for Dennis to look up for next week to explain to, we'll call these Cook's questions.
Cook's questions. Cook's
questions?
Yes. Anything.
What have you always wondered?
What have you wondered? Like, just things you've wondered about that you really don't have answers for.
Well, I mean, the big one that everybody does, it's like aliens.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
are you an alien?
Do you believe it? Do you believe in aliens?
Well, I mean, people see them all the time, supposedly.
They don't.
So what's the question? What question do you want him to look up? Are there aliens?
I guess.
Okay. Are there aliens, Dennis? Find that out.
What's the definition of it?
What's the definition of an alien?
DC wants to know, why are they called aliens instead of spoons?
Of course. Yeah, why not? Why aren't they called spoons? Like, seriously. Why are they called aliens? Where'd the word alien come from?
All right, so what's another one?
Hey, and what's an AT alien?
A what?
Know what that is? Do you remember that? You guys don't remember that?
A what?
He knows. It's kind of a thing, you know? Like, you remember Outkast, the rap group?
Uh-huh.
They were called AT Aliens, you know, like Atlanta like Aliens. Yeah. Yeah.
So we already know the answer.
Atlanta Aliens? Why aren't they Atlanta Cups? I mean, seriously. Art's our desk.
All right, Bob, you got one more. You've had a good amount of time to think here.
Well, I mean, there's three of
okay,
us.
Okay, let me ask you this question.
One. I think everybody should throw one. All right, in the pot.
This question. Dennis, I want to know this. Balding. Why does it happen? You're sitting here, me, Bob, and Nick, all with hair issues. Why do we get bald? Yeah.
Did we do something wrong?
What did we do?
Did we make a poor?
We don't get hair.
Was there a poor decision along the way?
Like, why?
Did wearing a hat hurt us?
Yeah, what was it? Why do we get balding?
That's a good one. I had a friend in college who told me wearing a hat will increase balding, but I barely ever wore a hat because my head was too big. So I don't, you know.
So yeah, I didn't wear hats, but my hairline goes to the back of my dang hair. I mean, seriously, it's like in the middle of my head now. Why am I getting bald? I think it's unfair.
I will put a report together for that.
And lastly, is there any way? Okay, so I want to do some hair plugs. But I want hair plugs.
Just a handful.
But is there any way to do hair plugs where I don't look ridiculous? Like, I mean, I know a couple guys that have done it. It looks ridiculous. I don't want, like, super black hair on the front of my... Okay, I don't want my hair to look like Steven Seagal's. But I don't want it to look so dark. Josh Thompson walked in, and the first thing he said was, why is your hair so fucking black? He's like, why is it so dark? Nobody has that black hair. Josh Thompson walked in and met Steven Seagal and go, why is your hair so black? It's like, nobody's hair is that dark. So I want hair plugs, but I don't want it to look that dark. Is there something out there for me?
So best hair options.
Best hair plug option. Yeah.
Hair plug options. Best hair plug. And... if they are very good, Nick will do it with me.
We'll do an episode with hair plugs.
I want to know if everyone's fingernails grow at the same speed.
Hey, another thing. I believe, this is quick, real quick. I believe, you might not believe this.
Let me just start with this.
I believe this, all right? Somebody told me that, and I can't remember if they were telling me if it was in white people, or just all men, your ears don't stop growing. So for a while, I just would walk past every white
don't
person.
Don't stop growing? Or
no. And they said white men, their ears just keep growing. So you walk past these older white gentlemen, and they just have fucking massive ears. Is this true? Or was somebody messing with me? So I've noticed that their ears are just massive.
All right, and then So you and then I heard your iPhone.
Is this real?
And all their ears are.
Have you noticed?
I have no clue.
Think about it for a second, Bob. Have you ever been? Have you ever been around like a whole bunch of older white guys and see big old ears?
Well,
maybe the rest of you shrinks.
Maybe. Like, what is this?
I mean, I'm just around a bunch of people with cauliflower ears, so like seeing fucked up ears is just normal.
No, watch, because I said this, you'll start to look at people and go like, this dude's like. There's something to that.
I'm going
to
measure my ears. The, I want to know, I heard that your eyeballs are the same size from the time you're a baby till you're adult. Is that true?
No idea.
All right. So, all right. We went off on a tangent there on questions for Dennis. Look.
We've overloaded him.
This is the Dennis. You've got a busy week going.
And we want a nice voice when you read it.
Yeah. And it needs to be good. Learn. Hey, as we wrap this up today, just know that our guy Dennis, who will have a recap for you guys before we start the show, and he'll tell you what we're talking about. And first thing you need to do, Dennis, is learn to pronounce our names. Dennis didn't know how to pronounce either of our names last week. This guy knows us. It's not like he just met us. This guy knows us.
I get nervous with the mic.
He could not pronounce our name. Dennis learned to pronounce our names.
I think he's got me.
He's got Bob Cook. Yeah. Yep. Bob, thank you for coming in. We really appreciate it. Nick, once again, it was fun. People out there that are going to listen to this, we appreciate you guys. Last week, the feedback was good. Thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you. This has been the Talk and the Talker podcast, episode number 2. We will see you guys next week.